Good morning. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Well, it's Children's Week here in Florida. That means activists are descending on the state capitol in Tallahassee to educate lawmakers on children's issues. But what does that mean exactly? Denise Marzullo is CEO of the Early Learning Coalition of Duval. She joined us for a closer look at that in our first segment this morning. Due to technical difficulties, we now join the conversation in progress. Take a listen.
In which our state legislators, policymakers, business leaders, and child advocates from across the state come together to celebrate children in the state of Florida. So we know every child born in the state deserves to be raised in a family environment where there is love and ongoing support. So we really appreciate being able to have a day in at the Capitol where everyone can come together from around the state and educate our political leaders on what's really needed for children today.
And as you go to Tallahassee, you lobby the lawmakers. What are your biggest priorities for this legislative session? What are you hoping you can persuade Tallahassee to do, to pass into law?
So from the Early Learning Coalition's perspective, we are very proud of the work that was done last year. So for the first time ever in the state of Florida, there was an accountability bill for the school readiness providers. So we're hoping that our legislators this year will expand on that and translate that same bill into the VPK providers. So the voluntary pre-kindergartners, teachers would also have the same level of accountability. And we always ask for increased funding. We know that we are second in the country for access for VPK. However, the base student allocation is not as high as it needs to be.
What does it need to be so that more pre-kindergartners can access early learning and get the benefits that data shows are so important?
Correct. So right now, all four-year-olds in the state of Florida, as long as they are four before September 1 and they are living in the state of Florida, they are eligible for VPK. The concern is that because the base student allocation is so low, they're all able to attend, but we're not reimbursing the child care centers as we need to. So that usually results in lower teaching pay, sometimes lower quality standards, because our providers simply cannot afford the low rates that they're being reimbursed.
If you're just tuning in, it's Children's Week in Florida as we speak with Denise Marzullo, who leads the Early Learning Coalition of Duval. What are your priorities for your kids when it comes to their well-being, their education, and what are your questions about early learning? Specifically, Florida's VPK program, voluntary pre-kindergarten. Data shows that kids that get quality early learning, that's before they ever get to kindergarten, are set up for a lifetime of higher academic achievement. Kids that don't get that mental stimulation before age five, well, they start kindergarten at a significant disadvantage. This is such a big deal, and so much happens from birth to age five in terms of brain development. It can't be overstated how important this is. We want your calls at 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and weigh in on Facebook as well. So Denise, let's talk about this because more than ever now, we know that kids that have access to early learning, that's before they turn five, they do so much better than kids that don't. So it seems like common sense that we should make sure as many children as possible have VPK. And we, on the face of it, we do have that in Florida, but the devil's always in the details, right?
Correct. So yes, 90% of a child's brain is developed before the age of five. So that is really significant in the number of words that they are exposed to. The academic curriculum that we have in our VPK programs is really critical for helping to ensure that that brain is developed so that the child is ready to enter kindergarten, ready to succeed. And so we really, the problem with having such great access, which is phenomenal for our state and for our four-year-olds, is that we have to balance that with quality. We want to make sure that our four-year-olds, as they're getting the instruction and the curriculum, it's done with really great teachers who are highly educated and understand important evidence-based teaching methods and have that quality interaction with the children.
Does the state have an assessment in place, a universal assessment for all of these programs? I mean, there are so many VPK programs. There's faith-based ones. There's programs through the school system. There's programs through various preschools. Even family childcare homes do it. Yes. It's a whole patchwork of programs.
So they currently are assessed based on STAR literacy assessment that the children do currently in kindergarten, in the first couple of weeks of kindergarten. So we know that's a stressful time for any parent who's taken their five-year-old for the first day of kindergarten. Imagine them taking a 30-minute test within the first couple of weeks. Also, that test is done on a computer with a keyboard and a mouse, which most five-year-olds have not had experience with. So there is really important legislation this year that changes that. So while the assessment is important to understand where they are when they start kindergarten, it's the implementation of the assessment. So right now the bill requires that all providers will do the assessment within the last 30 days of VPK. So that way it's done in an environment where they're comfortable. We don't get the summer learning loss that we know occurs over the summer before they start kindergarten, and it will be able to be done on a tablet. So Representative Grawl, Senator Harrell are sponsoring this bill, and we're really advocating hard to get it to pass.
And what's the chance of it passing?
It's really strong right now. So Representative Grawl is the same sponsor of the bill that passed last year, which was the accountability bill. So we're getting a great response from Tallahassee. We're pushing really hard with the other children's movements throughout the state to make sure that this bill passes. It's really important.
549-2937 to join us. Early learning matters. 90% of a child's brain development, as Denise just said, happens in the first 5 years of life. 90%. So it's baked in the cake, basically, before your child even sets foot in a kindergarten classroom. What you do from your baby's birth to age five is the most important stuff. We heard all about the college admissions scandal a few weeks ago, people desperately trying to get their kids into college and breaking the law. Parents put a lot of emphasis on all that. But the truth of the matter is that what you do with your child from birth to age five is the most important time. Early learning is the key to it all. If your kid gets quality early learning, they will have higher test scores, better grades. They will be more likely to graduate high school and go on to college. They will have better mental health. They will even have a longer lifespan. This is all about their health, too. So if you're wondering, well, how do I get my child into a quality program? This is what the Early Learning Coalition of Duval says you need to look for: a highly skilled staff, small class sizes, language-rich environments, age-appropriate curriculum, stimulating material, and a safe environment. Now, the website is earlylearningjax.org. You have a lot of information there, Denise, about VPK programs across Duval County, correct? So, because sometimes if you're a new parent, you don't know where to start.
Right. So you start at the Early Learning Coalition. So you can apply online through earlylearningjax.org. You just need to have proof of residency in Florida and a birth certificate. So proof of age and their social security number. And you can apply and you get to choose whichever provider you want to take your child to. Most of the early learning providers, family child care homes, do have a VPK contract with the coalition. And so you can go onto our website to find a provider. We encourage you, once you find a few providers that you're interested in, going, visiting, meeting with the directors, meeting with the VPK teachers, watching what happens in the classroom, and make sure that that's a place you want to be. We also encourage families to go to the DCF website. They can look up to see if any providers have had any violations. So class ones are the most severe, but they can look up the history of violations for any provider or family child care home.
And not to put my thumb on the scale too much, but I will anyway, just a little bit. Both my daughters received amazing early learning at St. Mark's Arc, which is on Hendricks Avenue, and it's right behind the St. Mark's Lutheran Church there. We found that program purely by chance through word of mouth. from other parents. And we just got really lucky there. So that's one I can personally recommend. But let's go to some phone calls now as we talk about Children's Week in Florida. 549-2937. Allison is in Avondale. Hi, Allison. Good morning.
Good morning. My concern is that we are subjecting children to academic rigors and testing before they're developmentally ready. I have a 4-year-old grandson in VPK, and he said to me, Yaya, I don't want to go to school. All we do is test. I feel like testing for 4-year-olds is out of line. I think play-based learning is so much more valuable.
Okay, that's an excellent question. That's Allison in Avondale. Denise, what about that? Are we putting too much on kids when they're only 4 years old?
Great, great thought, Allison. And I'm pretty proud of your grandson for being able to communicate that with you. They should not be taking multiple tests. I mean, the system is designed right now where they take two, one AP1 at the beginning of VPK, which is a very quick assessment, just gives a baseline so that teachers know where they are in the start of the VPK year. And then they do an AP3 so that they can kind of see the gains in learning for that child so that that information can be transmitted to the school that they go to, the kindergarten they go to, so that there's a history. But that's only two. There really shouldn't be that many more tests in VPK. So I don't know what's exactly being communicated from the provider that you're at, but tests should, I agree with you. We don't want to test our 4-year-olds.
549-2937. Elizabeth is at the beaches. Hey, Elizabeth, good morning to you. Happy Monday. As much as a Monday can be happy.
My daughter goes to, she's 4, or she'll be starting VPK next year, and I'm happy with the curriculum. It's like play-based learning, you know, not too academically in terms of, you know, sitting down and drilling. So I'm happy about that. But what about the fact about moving the VPK testing or testing to VPK instead of kindergarten? I would think that would put like the kids with the July birthdays or the younger kids at a disadvantage because there's still so much difference, I think, during that age, that time during summer, I don't think there would be loss. I think there would only be gains, especially for those children with July birthdays. Does that make sense?
Thanks for that, Elizabeth. Denise.
Yes, Elizabeth, you're right. There are some drawbacks. However, what we've seen is that the summer learning loss for 4-year-olds is actually pretty significant, especially if they aren't continuing to be stimulated. So if they're not being read to, they're not kind of doing some of those fun academic games and stuff, then we do see significant summer learning loss. So I definitely can relate. My son is a June birthday. And so we really wanted to make sure he was ready for kindergarten. He had gone to a great early learning center since birth almost. Mm-hmm. And so I can see where you're coming from with the July, especially our boys' summer birthdays. So we just encourage parents to continue to read with them throughout the summer, to continue to do fun academic kind of games. You can find them online, Amazon, any early learning activities for 4-year-olds that can just help kind of engage them with that over the summer.
Here's a tweet. When children feel safe and loved in the classroom, something magical happens. We guarantee learning will happen and they will be proud of their work. Take time to build those relationships. Hashtag Children's Week. Okay, and let's talk about the fact, too. You meant you were just giving advice to that parent about how to work with your child. The Early Learning Coalition of Duval does more than provide information about VPK, which, let me stress again, it's free to any 4-year-old in Florida. All you have to do is enroll. It's free. You really offer, Denise, not only information for parents, but you help parents strengthen the family. You help parents get on a better footing to teach their kids. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we do a lot of family engagement at the Early Learning Coalition. We do a lot of developmental health and screenings to help parents identify if there's any developmental stuff going on with their child and give them access to other resources. We do a lot of events throughout the community. We also have what's really significant to ELC of Duval is that we have our Guiding Stars quality rating system. So that is a program within ELC where we star rate centers. So it gives parents a good perspective, and it's mostly based on the teacher-child interaction. So again, are the teachers creating warm, loving environments for the children? Are they establishing that rapport and that relationship? And it's from a 1 to 5 star, with 5 stars being the highest quality. And so we're really proud of that program. Mm-hmm. And a majority of our providers are now participating in that.
What else should parents know? And what else is on your agenda this week when it comes to Children's Week?
So we're really excited. Senator Bean, who is a local senator, been in Florida Senate for many years, hosts us every year. We have a bus of 50 people. We have a very full bus of some staff, some providers, and lots of families going to Tallahassee tomorrow morning, leaving at 6 a.m.
And early day for you with the Early Learning Coalition. Yeah.
And our families and our providers. And so Senator Bean holds a mock session so that they all can see what it looks like to be in Tallahassee and gives a tour of the Capitol building. And it's really fun for everyone who goes. So we're really excited about that this week. We also have lots of meetings scheduled with our local legislators. So our families are able to go in and advocate for what they think is best for children. So we just encourage parents to get involved, ask their teachers lots of questions, keep an eye on, you know, any recommendations that the teacher has for making the 4-year-old educational experience fun. It definitely needs to be fun. They're 4, right?
Yeah.
But we also want to be trying to get them ready for kindergarten.
For more, go to earlylearningjax.org. Earlylearningjax.org. It's Children's Week. If you have a 4-year-old, get them enrolled in a free voluntary pre-K program. It is so important for your child. And Denise Marzullo, CEO of the Early Learning Coalition of Duval, thanks so much for sharing all this with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Right now, our uninterrupted spring pledge drive is going on this week here at WJCT. What does that mean? It means that we don't interrupt the programs you love to do long pledge breaks, which all of you listeners out there have told us you don't really like. But you know what? Here's the deal. Because we're not interrupting for long stretches, that means we need you to call now so that we can meet our goal without disrupting our regular flow of programming. Our station manager, David Luckin, is spearheading this for us, and he has a very quick interruption. It's a short interruption, but it is a short one, to tell us more. Hey, good morning, David.
353-9528. There you go, Melissa.
Now, that was the shortest pledge drive I've ever heard.
That is short and sweet. That's what it takes. So if you're not calling us, then we're talking at you. And we don't want to be talking. We don't want to be interrupting the programming. So we're sneaking in now real quick just to say we're fastly approaching Wednesday. And Wednesday is when we're going to have to come on the air, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, if we don't make this goal of $60,000. And I'm afraid to say we're only at about $5,000 now. So it is your turn to give us a call at 353-9528 and show that you really do appreciate an uninterrupted pledge drive where we haven't stepped on any of the program. This is the first time we've come in and taken a few minutes that wouldn't normally been used for a promo or for some bump music. So
that's
do your
right.
part.
This People, is... you got to do your part because we completely understand that you don't like your favorite shows interrupted. But, we've got to pay the bills, whether it's this show, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Fresh Air, Marketplace, Wait, Don't Tell Me, any of the shows that you hear on the radio at any given time that you really rely on and love and want to listen to every day. Well, the way it works is David has to create a budget to buy those programs so that we can then turn around and put them on the air. They don't come to us for free for the most part. We have to pay for them. They're a commodity, they're a product. And so we budget for them, and then part of that budget is paid for by you, the listener. And so say you listen to a show every day of the year. Well, what is that show worth to you? You get to decide how much that show is worth to you. Is it worth what you'd spend at Starbucks every day?
Well, or what you spend on Netflix?
Or what you spend on Netflix. So whatever you decide it's worth to you is what we're asking you to pledge by calling 353-9528 or donating online at WJCT.org. And nowhere else, David, will the seller of a commodity say, well, just pay whatever you think it's worth.
That's a nice deal.
Only we do that.
That's a nice deal. And lucky for us, some people think that's worth $500 a year. Some people think it's worth $120. Some people think it's worth $60. So the point is we are paying for a lot of programming that you really hope, that you really listen to and you count on every day. We're also going to bring you a new program in May called Here and Now, a brilliant two-hour midday news program that you're going to love. It's going to bridge what you learn on Morning Edition and what you don't know yet from All Things Considered. Well, Here and Now, right in the middle of your day, 1 to 3, starting April 29th, we're going to bring you everything you need to know every day, 2 hours, Monday through Thursday. Of course, we're saving Science Friday to be there on Friday, so we won't take that away. Mm-hmm. But Here and Now is coming, and it isn't cheap either. But our job is to bring you news and information that you can use, help enlighten you, help make you a part of the community. So we're bringing you new programs. We're keeping great old programs, but we need your help. 353-9528. Without your financial support, it's hard to do what we do here. So if you appreciate what we do, you listen to Melissa every morning. I know I do. 353-9528 is the number to call and show your support. A couple of $500 pledges would go a long ways towards that $60,000 goal.
It really would. And I am so excited that we are picking up Here and Now. It's produced by NPR and WBUR in Boston. It's heard across the country with millions of listeners, hosted by Jeremy Hobson and Robin Young, a two-hour show. And I really think you guys are going to love it. It's a great show. And I've heard it when I've traveled to other cities, and it's great that it's coming to the First Coast, David. But as you said, whether it's Here and Now or any of our other shows, you make it happen out there, First Coast. You make it happen. We need your calls right now. We're going to end the interruption. PTI.
There you
Pardon
go.
The interruption. This is mainly an uninterrupted drive, so you've got to get those phones going to help us keep it that way in the future. 353-9528 or online. Make that pledge at WJCT.org. Station manager David Luckin. You're a gentleman and a scholar. Always good to see you.
Thank you so much. And let's teach our children how to support public radio.
That's right. And later in the hour, a company founded here in Jacksonville is celebrating 100 years of success. Also, Cole Pepper, we'll take a look at his Sweet 16 brackets and free legal help being offered with U.S. citizenship applications. We'll tell you about that, too. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
That's what we do here every Sunday night at 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Glenn Fisher, the king of the doo-woppers, inviting you to take a ride in my time machine on the doo-wop revival. Sunday night at 10, right here on WJCT 89.9, where doo-wop is alive.
How often do you listen to WJCT? Every hour? Every day? Every minute? Imagine if you gave a dollar every time you tuned into WJCT. What would that add up to? Okay, now get out your wallet and your phone. Go ahead, I'll wait. Now call 353-9528 and make a donation in support of the programs you count on. Really, any dollar amount is appreciated. You can also donate at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted. Thank you. I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
I am Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music. Witness over three decades of jazz through 22 top five albums, five of which hit number one on the Billboard charts. The Rippingtons, featuring Russ Freeman, have continued to innovate. Jazz's Magazine has called their debut album the number one most influential contemporary jazz album of all time. Don't miss your chance to see the Rippingtons live at the WJCT Soundstage, March 28th. Tickets on sale now at floridatheater.com.
Hi, I'm Damian Lamar. Join me for Taste Test and broaden your musical palate as we redefine urban radio. Have a taste. Saturdays and Tuesday nights at 11 on WJCT 89.9 FM, Jacksonville, community supported radio.
Welcome back. He heads a company that was founded here in Jacksonville in 1919. And they're celebrating 100 years in business this year. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Jax Daily Record speaks with Mike Brannigan, President and CEO of Sedith.
Carl Sedith started the Sedith Companies 100 years ago in Jacksonville with a couple of small trucks, two mules, and a cart to haul the goods of the visiting rich and famous. Today, it employs more than 2,000 people worldwide and 750 people in Jacksonville. Sedith makes more than 35,000 corporate and consumer moves in the U.S. each year and 17,000 internationally. Mike Brannigan is President and CEO. Welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you for having us.
Tell me, what business strategy did Sedith use to reach 100 years in business?
Well, I don't think it's one single business strategy over 100 years. The business evolves and changes. But what I'll say is it starts then with the core values of the company: teamwork, innovation, commitment, integrity, and trust. And how does that translate to a business strategy is the marketplace is always changing, so you have to constantly be innovating to respond to the way your customers are changing, the marketplace is changing, opportunities present themselves in the market. So by investing in people and putting people at the center of our strategy and empowering them to respond to market conditions, it creates an environment where you are innovating, you are responsive to your customer needs, you're listening to the marketplace, and it helps you evolve your strategy to what the marketplace opportunities are. And I think that's been fundamental. Those values and being responsive to our customers in the market, that's a core part of the business strategy over the past 100 years.
What do you say the biggest challenge has been over the past century?
This may be somewhat paradoxical, but in some ways, success is an impediment and a challenge, because when you've had success and you started off with two mules and a cart and you're a moving company and you do really well at it, sometimes convincing yourself that you have to change and you have to do things differently to keep it going, that you have to embrace, in today's world, for example, digital strategies and technology and so forth, overcoming that and saying, okay, we've been really good at what we're doing, but what's got us here is not what's going to get us there to the next 100 years. Those are paradigms that you have to constantly be reinventing yourself. So I'd say one of the biggest challenges is being successful, but still convincing yourself that you have to change to stay on top or stay ahead of your competition.
What's that change? What's the next change that you see coming then?
I think the biggest change is this digital and the whole pace of change of technology. It's funny, when I talk to the employees, one of the things I say is, in this change management context, is if you think the pace of change is fast today, this is the slowest we'll ever see it in our professional lifetime. With the embracing of new digital strategies and so forth, you know, we see a constant and an accelerating pace of change. So I think embracing that and embracing technology and figuring out how to integrate technology into a legacy asset-based moving and storage logistics business, that I think is a new frontier and one of our biggest challenges as we move forward here.
Now, it remains a family-owned business with Steve Seddeth, the chairman, and he's the grandson of Carl Seddeth. How did being a family-owned business affect the growth of the company?
I think it's been an enabler. Steve and his father, Dick Seddeth, many years ago, probably four decades ago, they made a decision that a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of family-owned businesses don't make, which is they said, in order to get to the next level, let's hire and bring aboard a professional management team, and let's empower that management team to run the company and to take us to the next level. And many successful entrepreneurs can't make that decision. And that was a big decision because it really helped accelerate the growth from the mid-1970s all the way to where we are today. What it does, too, is it empowers people like myself and our leadership team. It creates a meritocracy that helps perpetuate the company going forward, because it's not just about being in the family. It's about your contributions, and you can grow within this organization. So that's a very important, powerful decision that they made four decades ago, and that continues today. I personally have worked in private equity companies, in publicly traded companies, and now a family-owned company. And what I think that being an enabler, in addition to what I just described, is a family company can take a long view. So we meet as a board, a very few group of us. It's fast decision-making. We may do things that in the short term can allow us to take a step back in some earnings or whatever that in a public company you might not be able to do because you don't necessarily have that long-term horizon. So family companies, at least with Steve and his family, which is, I think, a different type of leadership, more visionary leadership, we're thinking in a generation, not necessarily quarter to quarter. Of course, you know, quarter to quarter and doing well and being profitable and so forth is important. But in a family-owned company like this one, we take it for the long view and we're making investments for the long term. And that's been, for me as a CEO, very empowering because it allows me to think differently. It liberates you from some of the things that you have to might otherwise think about in a publicly traded company. So I think on balance, it's been very important and a strong contributor to the success of our company over 100 years.
Now, you and Steve Seddeth are going to be visiting all your more than 30 global locations this year. That's a lot of travel. What's your message going to be?
A lot of frequent flyer miles, so that'll be good. But I think the main point of it is to say thank you, right? We have a very family-oriented culture. People are our most important asset. So our most important message is thank you. Thank you for being part of the journey. Without our 2,000 employees and all those who came before us, this wouldn't be possible. So we're going out talking about the history, explaining how individual locations fit in to this bigger picture of the Seddeth companies, thanking them for their contributions, and also pointing out how the company is changing and getting them excited about the future. So it's actually been very exciting, very empowering, a lot of goodwill with our employees, and we're looking forward to the next few coming up here over the next month or so.
Now, you have a big celebration planned here, too, don't you?
We do. This is, of course, our home market. We started in Jacksonville in 1919 with Carl Seddeth, as you pointed out. And we actually at Episcopal here, a week from Saturday, I believe it is, we'll have more than 1,200 employees and all their families for a picnic and a celebration. And this will be our largest market celebration. So we wouldn't want to miss it. So that'd be very exciting.
And that'll be March 30th?
March 30th.
Well, Mike Branigan with the Seddeth Companies, thanks for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
In a moment, free legal help for those applying for U.S. citizenship. We'll tell you how to access that right after this. Well, free legal help is being offered this weekend with U.S. citizenship applications, people seeking to become naturalized U.S. citizens right here in our area. This is being done at Florida Coastal School of Law. Erica Coran leads the immigration clinic there, and she joins us now along with immigration attorney Kara Roberts. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, Erica, you've been doing this for 12 years now. Hundreds of people have been helped over the years. As you take them through the process, which can be difficult, to apply for U.S. citizenship, how does this all work? What's going to happen Saturday?
Well, we have about 50 law students who have been doing pre-screens for people who call us ahead of time. And we have an amazing group of almost 50 attorneys from the Jacksonville Bar Association helping us. And we're going to offer individual assistance all the way through the application, through the interview. So the attorneys this year are going to go all the way through with the applicants.
You know, recently, Kara, on the football field, the Jacksonville Jaguars held a naturalization ceremony, which was really moving to see all of these brand new U.S. citizens taking the oath of citizenship. That was the end point for them.
Yes.
They start with the attorneys like you, though.
Yes.
You take them through this process. What are some of the steps along the way? Because it's my understanding this is a long and sometimes complicated process.
It can be, and every case is different, and you face different kinds of challenges depending on the client, but everyone has to meet the same requirements, and so you have to have permanent residency for 5 years. You have to have continuous residence, and good moral character, which is kind of a vague concept.
Can't break any laws.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to.
Yeah. And so not only will you be helping people apply to become citizens, this is exciting for families because kids automatically become U.S. citizens when their parents become naturalized. Is that right?
Yes. If the children have lawful permanent residence and they live with their parents, when the parents naturalize one or both of the parents, the kids are automatically citizens, and that protects them. The kids, especially the kids that grow up here, a lot of the refugee kids, this is their country, and then that's solidified, and it makes it very easy for them, and they don't often even understand that that's going on.
This has become such a contentious issue in our politics, of course, immigration and legal immigrants versus those who came here illegally. This is certainly the hottest of topics right now. And so at Florida Coastal School of Law, the immigration clinic is designed to help those who want to go through the process legally. When you try to navigate the politics of this, What are your thoughts about that? Because, people are deeply divided in America right now over whether we need to build a wall on the southern border to keep any further migrants out. There's been so much dissent over the role of ICE, whether people want Immigrations and Customs Enforcement strengthened or whether they want to abolish that agency altogether. And there doesn't seem to be much middle ground in our politics right now around this issue. What are your thoughts about that?
I think when people start to hear individual stories, they feel differently when we think about these broad concepts. But what we're seeing locally, there's been a lot of enforcement, and we're starting to see a lot of people picked up and in the immigration system who've been here for 10, 20 years, owned businesses. They're part of our Jacksonville community, and they have U.S. citizen spouses, children. And unless the immigration laws change, there's no way for us to help them, sometimes very limited options for those folks. And that that is not good for our community. It's not good for the United States, especially when you have mixed status families.
And how common is that, a mixed status family?
So there are estimates that about of the estimated 11 to 12 million undocumented people in the United States, about 6 to 7 million of them are in mixed status families. So you might be deporting a breadwinning father or mother and leaving potentially behind U.S. citizen children.
One local family that got a lot of press attention, they immigrated here some years ago from Bosnia. So they settled in St. John's County. They started businesses. Their daughter grew up in America, spent most of her life here. She even participated in Junior ROTC. She, didn't really know anything but America. She was deported, though, along with her family, back to Bosnia. Since that time, I believe they're now in Germany. But that was one example of how tighter enforcement of rules around who can stay in the country and who can't can affect people who are trying to become citizens but have not been able to. So for all the people that you naturalize, Kara, there are so many that just are not going to reach that finish line.
We do a lot of screening to make sure that they're eligible for the process. And if they're not, we're doing our best to make sure that they receive the advice and the help that they need. And so citizenship, you have to be a green card holder before you can even apply. People who do not have green cards, we handle that in a different way. And we try to address their issues so that they get that help, because frequently people end up with in those horrible situations when they don't have access to attorneys or they can't afford one.
And how difficult is it to get a green card? You can't, as you said, you can't even go for citizenship without one. And so isn't a lot of the illegal immigration involves people overstaying a visa. Isn't that right? They get a visa to come here temporarily, but for whatever reason, they can't access a green card. They're not granted a green card.
Yeah, it's very difficult. There are very few pathways to obtaining permanent residence. You have to be sponsored and certain ways, family-based immigration being one of them, and the other way being different employment-type visas or specialty visas. But the numbers are capped. They're small. And then just for somebody who's coming to pursue the American dream, a better life, there's no visa for that anymore. And that's, you know, at least the way most of our ancestors came to the United States. So our immigration system has changed. So a lot of people say, oh, my family came here legally. Maybe, maybe not. 100 years ago, things were very different than they are today. So there really isn't the lack of desire for most of the undocumented people. It's just there's no mechanism.
All right. So with all of that said, this is happening Saturday, a free immigration clinic at Florida Coastal School of Law, happening Saturday from 9 to 3. What do people need to know to be prepared when they come to this clinic? What should they be aware of, and what do they need to know to attend?
They need to obviously be prepared to have the correct documents, so green card, Florida ID, social, 3 years of tax returns is best. If they're able to contact us and get screened ahead of time, that's absolutely imperative, because we are very limited in our ability to take walk-ins this year just because of the risks associated with applying for this benefit. So we'll do our best, but we can't guarantee that we'll be able to assist walk-ins.
How crowded is it typically? How much demand is there?
Yeah, we have well over 100 people scheduled. And so we hope we can meet that need and refer people that we can't meet to other providers. But if folks want to call, we're still taking calls, 904-680-7782. And we'd love to give people an individual screening before they come.
So if you are interested in becoming a naturalized U.S. citizen, you should attend this clinic Saturday if they can accommodate you. It's at Florida Coastal School of Law. Call 680-7782 or go to their website, fcsl.edu,
yes,
for more information. Again, this is free. Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., led by Erica Coran and Kara Roberts, both with Florida Coastal. And thank you so much for joining us this morning with a little bit of information about this. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And in a moment, the Sweet 16 is set in college basketball. Culpepper will join us and show us his brackets. That's after this. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
I got stopped by the immigration man. He said he doesn't know if he can. His immigration face, giving me a paper chase. But the sun was...
You turn to WJCT for more than just headlines. WJCT gives you news without spin or sensationalism. We partner with NPR, Marketplace, and the BBC to bring you national, international, and local news. And you are another of our indispensable partners. Your support makes our coverage possible. Donate now at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted. And thank you.
The UK has a rich history, and part of that cultural history includes cheese.
If you're not familiar with Dale's cheeses, they're white, rich, and, well, look, just go eat some, okay?
I'm Molly Wood. The story of one man's cheesy love of one British dairy product and what it might tell us about life in the UK after Brexit. Next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Bangladesh prepares to move tens of thousands of Rohingya refugees to a remote island.
At best, this is a move that may put an already traumatized population into more danger. And at worst, humanitarians working told me they fear this could become a mass grave.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's taken 22 months, but the special counsel's probe into Russia's election interference has run its course. Robert Mueller has handed over his final report to the Attorney General. What will it tell us about allegations of collusion? Did the president obstruct justice? Will we ever know? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
That's funny. Welcome back. And finally, this hour, the Sweet 16 is set.
It's Cole Pepper. Hey, there we go. He's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
That sounded a lot better than the way I did it. Who do you have in your brackets?
Well, so, you know, this has been a pretty chalky Sweet 16 to this point, meaning the top seeds have, by and large, done very well. Five-seed Auburn beat a four-seed Kansas, grumble, grumble, for one of the upsets. And Oregon, a 12-seed, is also in. But everything else has gone to the top seeds, at least to this point. There may have been some smaller upsets here and there, but we saw it here in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. The top seeds won all the way through. This has been a very predictable in terms of the outcomes. I will say, though, there have been some unpredictable games in terms of the way things have gone. Look to last night's Duke-UCF game, where Duke needed a couple of beneficial calls to wind up winning by a point over UCF, and Duke's the number one overall seed in the tournament. They have, you know, the great Mike Krzyzewski coaching and Zion Williamson. 1 point to get Duke on there. And, of course, Duke is also the most common pick to win the championship among all the brackets on ESPN. So we'll see how it plays out from here, whether it continues to go to chalk. Florida State certainly would like to see that trend change. As the number four seed, they'll face the number one seed Gonzaga Thursday in the Sweet 16. 7:09 tip-off, by the way, in the West Regional in Anaheim. The winner will take on either Texas Tech or Michigan for a berth in the Final Four. Last year in the Sweet 16, Florida State faced Gonzaga and won and moved on to within a game of the Final Four before losing. So they are certainly familiar with this team. And I think it's going to be a very good matchup. Two very athletic teams, long teams, and teams who have had very good success, particularly of late. Florida State has really been on a roll here over the last 16, 17 games.
Okay. It's my understanding that the Cole Pepper bracket is holding up nicely.
So it looks better as a futures bracket than it does as a presents bracket. I have 11 of 16 alive in the Sweet 16.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. I picked a few upsets that didn't come all the way through. For entertainment purposes only, of course, Melissa.
That's right.
And
no gambling here.
No,
on this
never.
Program.
But all eight of my Elite Eight picks are still alive, which is probably not all that uncommon because it's been such a chalky tournament so far. I do have Duke beating Tennessee in the championship, and both teams were tested. Tennessee yesterday had to win in overtime. So one thing you learn about this tournament is when you look back through the years, most of the time, the team that winds up winning the championship has had a close call in the tournament.
Didn't happen with Villanova so much last year. They kind of went ran away with things. But if you look at how things have played out traditionally, usually there's a close call in there for the team that winds up emerging.
Now, let's brag on you a little bit. You had the honor of being the announcer for the NCAA tournament games that were held right here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, so much fun to do that. Fourth time I've done that. All four times that the tournament has been here in the last 14 years, I was selected to be the public address announcer, which was great. Had a great seat right there on the front row. You're right in the midst of it. And you really feel the energy, too, when you're down there on the court. Gives you a real feel for what the players and the coaches are experiencing as the game goes on. And there were some great crowds. Kentucky, of course, always travels well. But I thought Wofford did a fantastic job. Their best team ever. We saw Fletcher McGee, their guard, set the NCAA career three-point shooting record during a game here in Jacksonville in their win over Seton Hall. Just a fantastic win for them in the first game, and then he sets the record in the loss. Again, Maryland had a good run of it before falling, and we saw LSU get the win in the last-second win over Maryland. I will say this. I think that the thing that Jacksonville can be the most proud of was not the sellout crowd on Saturday, because wherever Kentucky goes, you're probably going to get a sellout. But it's the way the tournament ran. Very smooth operations, received big compliments from some of the NCAA officials who were on site. Really a testament to the people who put on the event. I think we're going to see more March Madness in Jacksonville the next 4 or 5 years.
And how about the UNF marching band swooping in and subbing for the Yale band?
Hey, you know,
that was cool.
Anytime you can get that. And Yale had a Jacksonville connection. Austin Williams, who got into the game, went to the bowl school and plays for Yale. So you had some good local tie-ins there.
Okay. Last but not least, tomorrow, Cole says Florida and Florida State meet once again on the baseball diamond here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, their annual trip to the baseball grounds. About 10 days ago, the Gators whipped FSU 20-7 in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. So FSU will be looking for a little retribution. The other big thing about this game, quite possibly the last time that Mike Martin will coach the Seminoles in Jacksonville. There's a chance they could have a rescheduled game on a rainout that FSU had with JU, but this is probably the last time we'll see the all-time winningest coach in college baseball history coaching in the city of Jacksonville.
And there could be a UF athlete that gets picked by the Jaguars in the draft.
Potentially. Yes. Wednesday, UF holds their pro day, and Juwan Taylor, the right tackle, is a guy who's been mocked to the Jaguars quite a bit in some of these mock drafts. Jaguars are going to be paying very close attention, and they could use a right tackle. Jeremy Parnell, their starter, was let go this offseason, so that's one position that the Jaguars certainly like. And Tom Coughlin always likes to draft big guys in the first round, so keep a close eye on Juwan Taylor.
And follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper, for all your sports news and notes. Catch him every night on Channel 4, our news partner. Always good to see you. Have a great week, my friend.
Thanks, Melissa.
1A is up next, and on tomorrow's show here with us, the future of cities. How can Jacksonville rein in its sprawl and encourage more public transit? A closer look at that tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.
Our spring membership campaign is on right now. Have you noticed? Well, have you noticed we're not interrupting your favorite programs? To keep that up, we need your support right now. WGCT.org/radiouninterrupted and check out the great thank you gifts.